Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Just a quick note before we get started with today's episode. This podcast is supported by the amazing team at TRX. Their suspension trainers are designed for pros and built for everybody to use wherever you are. I see these in high-end gyms and the homes of trainers, coaches, and fitness enthusiasts like me all over the world.
The TRX app contains more than 1,000 videos to train you at your level and improve you every day.
TRX is the world's most versatile, affordable, and effective gym, and we're happy and proud that they're sponsoring the Quality of Life podcast. Hello, and welcome to the Quality of Life podcast, hosted by me, Raham Harreg, the youngest Arab and the first Saudi woman to climb Everest and the Seven Summits. And today, we're meeting Bex. Bex was a professional footballer who captained New Zealand through 2 World Cups and 2 Olympics. She finished her career winning the treble, as well as working with FIFA in their strategic planning and worked to bridge the gap between women's football and football stakeholders. Bex, thank you so much for your time. We're very excited to get to know you and for us to know more about your story. But seeing as the podcast is called Quality of Life, I always like to start with the simple question, which is, what do you think is quality of life in your opinion?
That's such a good question. And do you know what? It's a question that people don't ask enough, isn't it? I feel like you get sort of stuck in these like ways of being and like robotic ways of doing what we feel like we should be doing. And, you know, getting up in the morning, having your routine, going to work, coming home. And for me, I think quality of life is a combination, having the right balance of things. So I think balance is key. It's making sure that I'm, you know, striving for different things in terms of a career and what I want to do and how I want to build Crux Sports in terms of supporting the growth of women's football and in turn the growth of, you know, female empowerment and females in leadership positions and just having a better, more balanced society and cultures around the world. Cause I genuinely think that women's football is a tool for being able to do that. So that's a big passion of mine, but it's also, you know, having the time to, for example, Monday mornings, I don't work. I try to like leave that. I don't book things in on a Monday morning. And if I feel like working, I do. And if I don't, I don't. And that's the quality of life that I have afforded myself, being able to have started my own company and that flexibility. So there has to be some perks to working so hard and, you know, and then also, you know, family is really important for me, family and friends. So making sure that I really spend time with them. So I'm flying in a couple of weeks back home to LA for a week just to hang out with my parents. And I obviously have some work that I'm doing there as well. I have a client, but yeah, it's just making sure that you book in those times and really have that quality with the people that you love. I think it's so, so important.
Absolutely. You mentioned the people you love, but I would like to know, and I'm sure the listeners as well, we would like to know the people who have inspired you.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I have so many inspirations. I think I'm constantly looking for inspiration. My parents, I get emotional when I talk Aww. About them. Yeah. It's really annoying because it happens every time.
No, it's not. I get emotional. When I talk about my dad, I'm like a ball of emotion. Yeah.
Really? Was he in your inspiration?
He was the biggest pain in my butt in the beginning of my career. And he became the biggest supporter for me now in my life. So he was so completely opposing it in the beginning. And now he's my biggest ally. And that's why I get a bit emotional because he changed a lot for me.
So yeah, I can relate to you on that one. My parents have just always been massive supporters. They're quite different. My dad is, you know, business, entrepreneurial. My mom is like big adventure, a bit more spiritual, intuitive. So dad is more like rational, you know, the financial brain that I love. And mom,
one's the brain, one's the heart.
Dad is actually quite emotional and really sensitive. And my mom is quite like tough in some ways, but she sort of keeps the family together and stuff. So yeah, they've been amazing. I've also had my godmother. I mean, we call her my godmother. She's not really, because we're not really that religious, but she's nuts. She's absolutely crazy. She's 90 years old now. My dad met her when he was first in the garment manufacturing industry and fashion in LA. And she was one of the only women in the management in like most of LA, actually, in that industry, and then went on to own a button factory, the first button factory in LA, sold that, like turned it around from massive losses into profitability. And then when she lost her husband, she went down to South Africa and started working with women down there. Oh, I'm getting emotional today, Raha. Quality of life, you know, feeling, giving into emotions.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's all connected. And you can see, you can tell that that's a great influence on you. MashaAllah, yeah.
She was.
In addition to your incredibly fantastic and colorful family, MashaAllah, what's a book or something that you read that you would suggest our readers and me to read that has changed you or has, you know, benefited you?
You know, one of the books that I read in college, and I'm not sure, you know, I'm a big believer in the timings of things in life. So the time in my life that I read this book, it really like was quite an awakening experience for me. It's called The Art of Happiness. It's mm-hmm. the Dalai Lama and another guy, psychologist. Yep. That wrote it. Well, he wrote it actually about the Dalai Lama, but it was co-written. And I don't know. I think when I was at Duke University at the time, I was studying economics. There was a lot of talk about, you know, when you graduate and going into finance and, you know, all of these big goals and aspirations. I was playing soccer at the time, captain the team, you know, big, like achieving things, you know, quote unquote, achieving things. And then got asked to captain the New Zealand team. So was thinking, okay, maybe I'll, you know, do that and play. And it was just like one of those books that actually was sort of the antithesis of go, 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 achieve, 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 money, money, status, power, you know, all this sort of stuff. And it was just really nice. It felt like a nice balance of understanding a little bit and a glimpse into Buddhism and, you know, the lack of material things. And just the way in art that the Dalai Lama lives was quite inspirational to me. So that was a really transformational book. And also it was one of the reasons why I studied psychology after my MBA, one of them, but because he's a psychologist. So
yes, it's Howard Cult.
Ah, there you go. Nice one.
It's called, because in case I'm going to add it to my list, but it's it was published in 1998. The 14th Dalai Lama and Howard C. Cult, and it's called The Art of Happiness. So thank you for suggesting that.
Yeah.
You seem to be like me, very, very active and very hyperactive. Like before the call, she was catching up on food and I was catching up earlier. So I want to know, Bex, what's your day like? Can you explain to our listeners what's your day like an average day?
I certainly can. And the answer to that is I don't have an average day.
That's me as well.
Yeah. Do you get up at the same time every day as well or totally different?
Usually, yes. Usually, like my chronological clock, just, you know, if I don't have work, yes, I do wake up the same time. But lately, this, especially last month, was just a weird month for me. Like there's so many things happening around and I traveled a lot. So it's a bit of a mess.
So mine, yeah, you could call it a mess or you could call it organized chaos, I guess.
I like that. I like
right?
that.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't really have a typical day. Like this morning, I got up. I had to reset all my phones. So I randomly set an alarm on my phone and it was set to silent. So there was an alarm, but the alarm's like chosen sound was silent. So I don't know. Don't know how that happened. So I missed the first train to get out here to Cobham where my partner is. I made it in time, but obviously that's what made me then everything. So then you have the train strikes. And so I work from wherever. I have clients all over the planet. I travel a lot. So I was with Bayern Munich, the club, the women's team a couple of weeks ago for a day doing a workshop with the players there. I was up in Nottingham on Thursday of last week at a Harvard-sponsored conference with Harvard and Nottingham Forest about equality and racism, eradicating that in football. So that was incredible. You know, I'm going home in a couple of weeks to LA. I'll continue working from there and see my family. So I really like to have a balance of, you know, work and play as much as I can. I went with like my partner and her kids to the Balloon Museum on Saturday. So that was fun in London. So yeah, I don't really have a typical day. I don't wake up at a certain time. I know there's like a lot of books and self-help things that say you have to have your pattern, you have to have your routine. I don't believe in it. I feel like you should go with what your gut's saying and how your body's feeling on the day. You know, we're scheduled to go to the gym today, but I think I'll just probably just do a little home workout. So yeah, I kind of ebb and flow.
You mentioned your daily activities, but you didn't mention food much. So I'm very curious to know, what's your food like? What's your diet like? What's your relationship with diet? And if you can, and please only answer if you're being honest, what's a cheat sheet or your guilty pleasure meal?
So having been a professional athlete, I think when you're pushing your body at that level every single day, you really realize the importance of food as fuel. And when you put crap in, you get crap out. And that was, you know, I've carried that after my career as well. I really think that diet is linked to performance and mood. So I really try to eat quite clean. So I try to eat a lot of veggies. I sort of went a bit vegetarian about 2-3 years ago. So I eat fish occasionally, but I do have sort of as high a protein diet as I can, but with natural foods, so no meat. And I don't really snack a lot. I don't eat a lot, but I don't eat a little. And again, like, it depends on the day. So I really like food. I didn't really like it when I played. I was never really interested in food. It was like, it's just fuel. I just eat to sort of fuel up.
I'm the same, to the detriment of my family. Like, I'm not a foodie. My family is such a...
Do they cook a lot?
Oh my God, they're foodies and cooking. And really? For me, I'm a very picky eater because I have like IBS, yeah. And I'm very picky and stuff like that. So to me, food is just a means to just feed myself. And I wish I was a little bit better at being a foodie. I think I miss out though.
But I think you're right, because if you have like IBS, or if you're celiac, or, you know, you can't handle gluten, or you have a lot of allergies.
It becomes really complicated. Yeah,
it does become complex. And then you can't go out for dinners as easily. I mean, it's becoming better. You know, they have gluten-free menus, and they have, you know, vegan options almost everywhere now. So I think the world is waking up to the fact that actually food is really important. So yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, it's so super crucial to who I am fundamentally, but equally, I don't really think about food that often.
Yeah.
Guilty pleasures. I don't know. Oh, do you know what? There's these crisps. They call them crisps in England. I would call them chips.
Fries.
No, like potato chips.
Yeah. Like steam.
Yeah. Like the crispy potato ones.
Oh yeah.
And they're like truffle flavor.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what the brand is, but so
it comes in a can, and then you open the can.
No, that's Pringles.
No. No, it's not Pringles.
Okay, go on.
It comes in a big black can. I have one right now. It comes in a
here. Torres, this is them. Torres Selecta black truffle.
Yeah, but there's another brand as well that does this.
Is there?
It comes in I have one right now, like a big black can.
I need to see this can.
And you open it, and it's so good. And you can put it in you can make it hot. You can put it in the oven. You can make it hot, and it's so good.
You make it hot? Like potato chips?
You can make it, you can crisp it up. But these that I'm talking about, they need to sponsor us. This brand needs to sponsor us. They're so good.
Yeah, they should sponsor and send a lot to all of us.
You open it. When we finish this, I'm going to show you the brand because it's so good. It comes in white truffle, black truffle, and it comes in different. Yeah.
Yum. Yeah.
What's your approach to wellness? We talked about the quality of life, and then you talked about your daily life, your food, the importance of your family. But what's your approach to wellness? In my case, wellness is balance between sports and running around and my job. And that to me is wellness. But some people, for them, wellness is setting time for yoga, or setting time for this or that. So in your case, what do you think is your approach to wellness?
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to what we've sort of kicked off the conversation with. I think for me, wellness is about having balance. So I don't follow any prescription. I've just sort of now in my early 40s discovered vinyasa flow yoga, and I really like it. It's, you know, the breathing and the flow and the tempo and sort of the music that has binaural beats, which are, I listen to a lot of binaural beats when I'm going to sleep or if I really need to concentrate. So that's just brand new. So I think life is all about enjoyment and really trying to find things that you enjoy. And, you know, I really enjoy the work that I do. I don't see it as work. I really think that it's for a greater cause. I really believe in the power of women's football as a vehicle for cultural and social change, which is needed in a lot of parts of the world. In actually every parts of the world, you know, and every microcosm, there's always some kind of misogyny or racism or homophobia. And I really think that, you know, the women's game is just, I've seen such incredible things happen through it and with the players. So I love my job. I think it's a lot of fun, but I also, you know, yesterday, like knocked off at 3:30 and went and did a vinyasa flow yoga course. You know, some days I like to sleep in. I think sleep is underrated. I think that sleep is so essential to our mood and health.
People don't put enough emphasis on the importance of a healthy and consistent, decent sleep. You only feel how important it is when you don't have good sleep. Then you know, I have this horrible cough that's been attacks me at night. I'm fine during the day and I already appreciate sleep. And now I'm like, sleep is even more like it. So people really need to put an emphasis, just like how you schedule your day, you schedule your training, you schedule when you go to sleep, schedule when you start your sleep ritual. Because people, they go to bed and then they're on their phone for 2 hours. So that's critical time that you should be sleeping.
I'm like a minimum 8 hours a night kind of gal, Raha.
Same.
If I don't get 8 hours, I literally am crab bum the next day. So that's a big one.
Same. If I can, like unless I have a flight or I have work, 8 hours is for me the top priority.
Yeah.
Whether it's staying in a little bit later when I wake up in the morning or sleeping really early the night before to make it eight. But 8 hours to me is really important. And people are like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, you make rituals.
Yeah.
You make sleep rituals. In my case, I make sleep rituals.
What do you mean like sleep rituals?
Like a wind down. So eat don't eat late, eat at a certain time, you know, shower, do what you need to do. Read, for example, in my case, audiobooks make me sleepy. So I put the audiobook for like half hour or 20 minutes, the timer, and then it makes me a little bit sleepy. And then I just take the plug out and just go to sleep. Or I just turn it on the speaker. And then in 20 minutes, it puts me to sleep. Some people like to write. Some people like to, right before bed, I like to do, I'm catching up on my Spanish. So I do a little bit of Duolingo. And just have a consistent thing that tells your body that you're going to sleep. But don't go to sleep and then hold the phone, social media for 5 hours, for 3 hours. Don't do that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Find a way to... Even if you have your phone, because we need it to put the alarm and stuff, don't get sucked into the mediaverse and you're like,
The Instagram hole. Yeah.
You are an incredible athlete and very well decorated, and you represented your countries. Bravo on, by the way, it's an amazing career you had. But I'm very curious, what would you say is the biggest achievement or you're most proud of success?
Oh, that's such a good question. Do you mean in my football career or just in life?
I like to leave it open because a lot of people surprise me with this answer. So I'll leave it open. If you had one space in your mantle to hang something, to be the thing you're proud of, what would that thing be?
I think it would be a picture of my family.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That's what I would say.
Yeah, because I think you're going to make me emotional again, Raha, but how my parents have raised us, my sister's my best friend, and I have just lovely people around me that feel like family, you know, lovely partner,
I love
her
that.
Gorgeous kids. Yeah. So I feel really lucky to have such a gorgeous family. My parents are just the most amazing humans. So, and my sister's really badass. She's just the coolest person I know on the planet, and her wife as well.
What does she do?
My sister's a director of photography. She's a DP. So she does TV. So she's working on a TV show now called The Cleaning Lady with Fox.
Okay.
She did Mayans. So she was a DP for Mayans for 5 seasons, I think. All the seasons. So she's pretty badass.
Older or younger?
She's younger, Raha. It's so bad. Like, I did economics degree, Spanish degree, master of business, master of psychology. She failed all of her schooling, and now she's like making a gazillion, bajillion dollars more than me because she's really creative and really, really good at what she does. She does
and
all
street
the
smart, probably. I sucked at school.
Yeah. And that's, you know what? That's the thing, right? Like, I think the educational systems are not right. They're not right. Like how she struggled in school and how much she suffered, and to see how much she flourishes now and what she does.
Oh God, I feel her.
Yeah. You feel her.
I sucked at school.
Yeah.
I barely, went by in school, but I was always very street smart and very hardworking. So please send her our regards.
I will. And you've done very well for yourself as well, Raha. So there you go.
I don't think my siblings would call me a badass. We have completely different dynamics, but yeah, they're very proud of me, but they still see me as the little one. So I can never shake that off.
Fun being the little one.
Sometimes, but yeah, I appreciate the love regardless, but yeah, they're a little bit different. I'm sure you've faced so many challenges, especially in the sport that is usually perceived to be very male dominated, especially football and on the national level. So I would like to know, what are the main challenges or the biggest challenges you faced?
Oh my goodness. I mean,
you don't have time, huh?
No, I don't have time. I mean, for football, the football industry is pretty gross, if I'm honest, in a lot of ways. It's brilliant and amazing in other ways as well. But it really has a wide spectrum of some of the worst things I've ever seen in terms of egregious human rights violations. From some of the things I've seen against violence against women that were cultivated in a football environment and allowed to perpetuate in a football environment, even though they were brought to the attention of the highest authorities, to, just being in an environment where it is mostly men and very non-diverse and seeing the singularity of thought, which is so dangerous, at the top level. So the decision making that's done for football not being inclusive, not being really well connected to the sport, so really what's happening on the ground for players, for athletes, for physios, for coaches. I think that was sort of the biggest challenge for me, going from being a player, transitioning into the business side, and realizing that, God, the gap is so big. And I think that was always a challenge to try to then, is one of the reasons why I started Crux Sports, was to really try to bridge the gap between like business and investment and, you know, amazing marketing campaigns and brilliant content into really linking it to the sport, you know, what's good for the sport. Because I think a lot of, let's say, brands, when they first entered into the space, like 4 or 5 years ago, really on a like more global scale, there was a lot of, you know, content out there that then depicted women as victims, you know, these poor women, they don't get any money. It's like, no, these women are amazing athletes. They are badass. They can play. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they're moms, you know, and in addition to that, they're playing at an elite level of football. So just making sure that connection is there and bridging that gap. So I think in terms of challenges, yeah, I've had a hard time navigating the business side of football, seeing, you know, the sporting side and understanding the sporting side and seeing that big gap, I think has been quite challenging, and trying to bridge that gap is sort of the challenge that I've taken on with Crux Sports.
And it's a very big gap, and a lot of people don't understand and have a very big misconception, because they believe equality in sport is just simply paying people equally, but that's not the case.
Yeah,
the money comes from an interest, and the money from an interest in the sport, and the interest in sport comes from putting money in the sport and growing it and making it big enough that you have people looking at it and people following it. Sports only grow as much as the people see it and like it and get into it and so on. But if you don't put money investment in women's sport, it will never reach that level, because there's a misconception. They think it's just because it's women. No, if there was a third gender, then it's going to be the same case. It's because men's sport took all of the attention and all of the funds and all of the means in growing it. Plus, many sports with women started later than men. So we don't have the same established companies and the same established careers as men have. So it's not just simply, yes, pay them equally. The money must come from an interest and a desire and a want to see that sport. You know what I mean? It's a cycle. Mm-hmm. So there's such a big misconception about this. And I always tell that it needs to be addressed across the board, not just, you can't just answer by, yes, pay them equally. Yes, you need to pay them equally. That's very important. But where is the discrepancy coming from? It's coming from a lack of interest and a lack of support, right? That's where it comes from. It's not because one is better than the other. One is just more visible. Jenna just happens to be more visible than the other. It's exactly the same argument with male models and female models. It's exactly the same argument that the fashion world has been established way longer and has way more roots and way more opportunities than men. So that's why women get paid more in fashion. So it's not just because one person is better than the other. You have to.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same because women's clothes sell more, but men don't wear. Men don't need clothes. Men, of course, need. Do you know? It's just this
arguable.
Arguable. But do you know what I mean? Like, there's this misconception that you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, 100% agree. But, and there's a really good business case for that when you look at Title IX in the US. So to break that model, you have equal investment at the collegiate level in male and female collegiate programs.
Yes.
So that's academic and sporting. So you have to give equal number of scholarships to male and female athletes. So that means that if I have a young kid and it's a boy or a girl, they have exactly the equal opportunity to be able to get a scholarship in the US, which is huge because that's a lot of money that you save, right? So you then invest the same amount in your children from a grassroots level.
And notice the correlation of brands growing bigger, sports brand becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. You have more demographic now that want to get dressed for sports. 80, 90 years ago, there was a very small demographic of people that did sports. Mm. Now it's open to the masses. So it's win-win for all, but just people are so narrow-minded and thinking, oh, men's sport is better. No, it's not. It's just because it's more established than women.
Yeah, and it has been better because they've had more.
They've had longer time to
play.
Fix it.
They've
yeah.
had more facilities to play on. They've had better coaching because they've had men who have come through and then gone back into coaching.
Exactly.
They've better refereeing. They have better, more money. They have more sponsors. They have, so all of this money that has been invested in men's football for so many years has made the quality of the sport better than women's. But the fact of the matter is it's not inherently better.
No, that's what I keep saying.
It is a factor of the environment that they've had this amount of investment for so many years. So you start investing and you can grow. So
one side just had an earlier start than the other.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that one's better than the other.
I actually think women's football will be bigger than men's football.
Look, I have a saying. I always say this in sports. When I know, because I like to be very political. And when people ask me, when do you think will you receive equality in sports? And I always say that equality will arrive the day when someone asks, there's a football game and you need to ask if it's men or women's football.
Yeah, and that already happens in many parts of the world.
And all sports, because it's men and then women's football, and then it's men's basketball and then women's basketball. But synchronized dancing, water ballet
swimming.
Is water ballet. Like you don't have to put female next to that or male. So until we reach that where people are like men or women, I think that's the type of equality. It's equality in the mind as well. It's not just, it's not just that. It's deeper than that. So hopefully one day.
Raha, I needed you in the room when I was at FIFA, when I was arguing the fact that we need to call it the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup.
Absolutely.
I can't even tell you the crazy looks I got when I suggested that. And I said, it just makes sense, because growing up in the US, there was only one World Cup for me, and it was the women. The men didn't qualify every time, and the women won it multiple times. And so in the US, the World Cup is arguably equally as female as it is male. So like when I came to FIFA and I talked about the World Cup, they're like, no, what do you mean? The World Cup is in Brazil. I'm like, no, what do you mean? The World Cup is in Canada. Like, men's World Cup in Brazil, women's World Cup. So, but you need that labeling. The rhetoric is so important. Language is so important.
Because it will open up a door to a whole new generation when you have men and women. So it's so many different things. It's details, it's semantics, it's so on. So I, if you ever need me to sit in a room, you got my number.
Yes, please. Happy to do that. No, I'm out of those rooms now, but maybe the next rooms.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
And we touched on the future of the sport, but I want to know in detail. First of all, I want to know future of the sport in general, and then I want to know what's in the future for you as Bex. Let's start with the sports in general, and then the next one personally for you.
Yeah. So I did say this and just right now, but I actually think women's football will be bigger than men's for a fundamental, like, business argument and an economics rationale behind that, in that the women's game appeals to a wider variety of people. It's a much larger audience. So you have young kids all the way up to, you have hooligans, we don't have hooligans. So you have young kids, you have, the 15 to 25 year old male, like really hardcore fans, like the Parisian ultras who follow the women's PSG team, for example, all the way up to grandparents who feel like it's a lot more of an inclusive environment. You also have a lot of men who feel quite excluded, men and women who feel excluded from men's football because of, the foul language, the racism, the homophobia, some of the toxic environments that men's football creates. I think it's quite repulsive for a lot of potential fans, where you don't have that. The environment when you go to a women's game is completely different. It's family friendly. It's very celebratory. The players will stay often afterwards and sign autographs. So there's a connection to the actual sport. Some of the players are a lot more relatable because some of them are moms, some of them are lawyers, some of them are doctors. Some have other jobs, some are studying. So I think that they, can relate to a wider population. So when you look at the fan base potential, it's a bigger fan base potential than the men's game is. When you look at men's football, the majority of the fans are male. Globally in women's football, it's pretty split actually. Because men are used to watching sports. So you think about the fact that men's football has been quite exclusive just to men in terms of a fan base. And therefore, I think that, with a value proposition that is a lot more inclusive and diverse, which is much more appealing to brands and broadcasters and a lot of fans globally, there's going to be more investment and more money coming into it. No doubt there already is. I've seen that in the last 5 years where teams were evaluated at negative in the NWSL in the US 5 years ago to now 68 million to just enter into the league in 5 years. So that growth is phenomenal. So I genuinely think that the women's game will be bigger than the men's. I just think it takes time because of certain things like investment cycles, contracts that have already been signed. So the broadcast cycles are, you know, 4 years sometimes out. So, and yeah, so in order to find the games that the women's games can come into, you know, we know when Champions League is, you know, it's Tuesday, Wednesday night. We know that Europa League is on a Friday night. I'm just making this up. We know that Premier League plays on a Friday night, not Saturday at 3 p.m. on a Sunday, Super Sunday. Like, we know that there are all these things already scheduled for years and they've been a tradition. But those traditions need to be able to break and change to be able to allow the women's game into it, because there's a commercial opportunity for broadcasters, brands, and fans with the women's game. So I think it will take time for sure, but I see it as being bigger, and I see it as still retaining the really positive values that it currently has. And I think it's really, really important for the planet. I really do. I really, when you look at what's going on,
it's going to create, it creates so many new jobs and opportunities. It's a whole new, yeah.
But also just like from a cultural and social shift too, Raha. Yeah. You know, like there's so many countries where, you know, women are quite oppressed. They don't have the same rights as men. You know, that gay people and trans people are not really allowed to be who they are and not be public. And, you know, in the men's game, we finally have one or two male players that are currently playing. I mean, my goodness, for years there's been gay male players, but they've never felt that comfortable enough or safe enough, more importantly, to come out. So I just think the environment that the women's game projects, and it's a safe place, it's an inclusive place, it's a diverse place. And I think that the world needs more of that. It really does. So I see a positive future.
We definitely need more of you, Bex, women who are passionate and are just trailblazers and hold the torch higher for the next generation. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your passion and for just being a badass. You're the badass too. Not just your sister, you're also a badass as well. I hope you keep, you know,
back at you,
fighting,
buddy.
The good fights and paving the way for the next generation, as you are. Thank you so much for listening to the Quality of Life podcast, hosted by me, Raham Harrak, and produced by Pineapple Audio Production. Please do follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And keep listening every Friday morning and Tuesdays for our mini bonus episodes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.